Hey, welcome to Urban Planning is Not Boring. I'm Sam.
And I'm Nat.
Happy Women's History Month.
Welcome to Women's History Month.
This is not a laughing matter. This is a very serious.
Yeah, no. Actually, happy Women's History Month. We are not going to be focusing on as much about that this time because we prepared this before March. But we will be talking about Women's History Month in our next episode, probably. So stay tuned.
Yes.
And before we go on, there's something that we have from last time. And that is the VMT that we each did over the course of 1 week. And we did spend time calculating this, so it is as accurate as we are able to make it.
Yes.
So I drove approximately 180 miles, and that includes I took an Uber in New York to the airport.
Uh-huh.
I drove to and from the BART station 4 days of the week and just like other miscellaneous things. And Natalie drove about 280 miles. And granted, you have much further commute to work than I do.
Yeah, my 116 mile commute.
Yeah.
But fortunately, one day a week. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not as taxing, but it's a lot.
Yeah. So I would say that's, you know, just some food for thought. And I know that we said we would do that. So I wanted to say we did not forget. And we were keeping track. And unfortunately, I don't think that there's a lot that I could do to change my, I mean, besides like the Uber to the airport, that was kind of a one-time thing when I was traveling, but the commuting, it would just be simply so inefficient to try to take the bus. I would have to take 3 different buses to get from my house to the BART station when it's like a 15, 20 minute drive. So I honestly don't think there's much that I could do to change mine at this current moment. Although when I do move into the city, I'm not bringing a car.
Yeah.
So I will have a lot less VMT there.
Yeah, that's going to be exciting. I can't wait. We're going to, so, you know, now Sam and I did our homework. So now it's time for everybody to turn theirs in as well. Yeah.
Make sure you email us your homework assignments or you'll get late homework.
Exactly. You're going to be missing points and we're going to block you on Instagram. So, yeah, when you move and you don't have a car anymore, that's going to be really interesting. We should probably then do a new VMT tracker.
Yeah.
But definitely, I think after, you know, just seeing like how large my commute is into Los Angeles, I think I'll just start walking, if I'm being honest.
Let's start the night before.
Exactly.
Or maybe like 2 days before and just don't work on those other days.
Exactly. Or like I can work on my phone.
Oh, you could get the Vision Pro.
Yeah.
Vision Pro.
Yes.
And work simultaneously to walking. Correct.
Yes. So I will just walk from my house into LA, the 58 mile walk.
Yeah.
And then I'll walk back and I'll get home a couple days
later. Or you can bike.
Oh God. Yeah. Actually I could do that. I could not imagine doing that.
Yeah. I've actually thought about it and I'm like, I don't know how I would do it and avoid the freeway.
Yeah. I also just started running this year and I ran 2 miles and I almost died. So I'm not 100% sure if I'm equipped with the cardiovascular health. Or strength to bike 58 miles, but I could definitely try.
Yeah.
And one thing about I'll try, I'm willing to try anything.
Natalie's homework for next week
is to bike
58 miles on the freeway.
Oh my God. I'm going to be on the news. They're going to be like, woman arrested on
TV. You know what? There's no such thing as bad publicity.
That's so
if they interview you and they say, I did it for the podcast.
I did it for Urban Planning is Not Boring. Everybody like, don't listen.
Okay, you're free. Today, we are going to be discussing the impacts of COVID-19, the pandemic, on downtown areas and cities, which is something that has been talked about a lot. But I think now that we are in a state where people are feeling, for the most part, like more comfortable meeting in, like going out and kind of resuming normal activity, I think there's some progress that we've made in the state of downtowns, but there's also a lot of concerns that we're never going to see downtown get back to where it used to be.
This episode was actually sparked by one of our followers on Instagram who, when Sam and I did one of the call out boxes on our story and asked for some ideas that people, you know, wanted to hear more about, or I'm sorry, not ideas, topics that people wanted to hear more about, this individual put into the comment box that they wanted to hear about post-COVID downtowns. And there was this, you know, there is a large concern that the COVID-19 pandemic ultimately destroyed the kind of thriving fabric of city centers, leaving behind what a lot of media is titling ghost towns. And so Sam and I are just going to talk about what does this mean for the future of planning when we're talking about it from an urban planning perspective. You know, what is that going to look like when we do have this issue of a lot of retailers leaving city centers and a lot, like, I mean, I'm sure tons of people have been seeing the vacant retail centers and this kind of huge call, like you're driving through downtown and you just see all those big leasing signs because buildings are unoccupied. And so we are going to be focusing today on a mixed methods research project that was conducted by the Brookings Institute, where they looked at the 45 largest US downtowns. And this article is seeking to understand the future of downtowns through interviews, spatial data analysis, and direct engagement with local leaders.
Let's get into this.
Yes.
We're going to start with the historical context of ghost towns. And then, like Natalie said, we're kind of going based off of this Brookings Institute research project. So ghost towns are not a new concern, but rather history repeating itself under different circumstances. Only a generation ago, white flight and suburban sprawl left many cities as partial ghost towns. And this is something that if you are in school and you're studying anything related to planning, you'll definitely talk about white flight and suburban sprawl and this kind of desirability of the big single family home with the yard, with the car, and you're able to have space and you're able to be surrounded by people who look like you and are, you know, it's just, it was a really, really big phenomena that really shaped how our cities and suburbs are structured today. Suburbanization spread the fruits of growth out over more land area and jurisdictions, while public and private sector abandonment of city centers both concentrated poverty and increased the overall cost of services, weakening city and regional economies and exacerbating racial and economic segregation. This began to reverse in the early 2000s as younger educated workers began moving into city centers, lured by proximity to jobs, amenities, walkability, and a sense of place that downtowns offered.
Yeah, so this was all coming from that Brookings article, and this just really highlights the way that often when we talk about urban planning, what we are also talking about is the way in which society changes. And often society's perceptions of spaces really is influenced by, you know, local elected officials and leaders and planners and, you know, all of these individuals that are kind of at play. And so we do see that these, you know, this behavior, human behavior, is going to fluctuate as, you know, things change over time. And so there has been a fluctuation in the way that downtowns have been perceived. And so what we've seen is that over the last three decades, then city centers went from being perceived as dangerous and declining, which was one of the leading reasons for what they call white flight and suburbanization, to increasingly unaffordable and exclusive areas. And that's a driver of urban inequality. This is what we're talking about when we discuss gentrification. And now there's this shift to the downtown city center being dead once again due to the retreat and slow return of office workers, increasing business closures, vacancies, and a fear of crime and homelessness. And so again, there's just this kind of, you know, like different fluctuation at different time periods that are influenced by different things, but they are constantly shifting human behavior and how individuals are choosing to, you know, interact with the urban form.
So now we're going to get into COVID-19 and the impacts that the pandemic has had on downtowns, which I'm sure everyone listening has intimately experienced this in some way or another. You work in a downtown, you have tried to, you know, walk around or visit, or, you know, you live near a downtown, whatever it is. I'm sure everyone has felt this. So the COVID-19 pandemic not only kept people sheltered in place, but also required many jobs that were placed in the city center to convert to remote work. However, even after the major peak of the pandemic, we saw that downtowns were not recovering. And I feel like, as someone who works in downtown San Francisco, I have definitely seen a huge difference in the amount of people on the trains commuting and the amount of people walking around downtown, the amount of people driving around downtown. I like almost never have to wait in line to get lunch when I go out, and talking to people who worked in downtown before, that is like unheard of. Like, you would always have to wait in line for lunch because there were so many people going out, you know, around that lunch hour. For example, in downtown Washington, D.C., daytime population plummeted 82% from February of 2020 to February of 2021, and only 9% of office space was occupied as of February 2021. Much like the suburbanization wave of the previous century, the pandemic pivot to telework and remote work and even hybrid work has flatlined downtown activity and raised existential questions about its future. Where downtowns were once unique agglomerations of jobs and assets, long before the pandemic even, they were facing competition from other activity centers in both downtown adjacent and suburban locations. And it's really interesting because I feel like this kind of suburban location and suburban downtown, I've really seen that where I am, at least. I live in like a suburb of San Francisco, I live in a suburb that is within driving distance or transit distance to San Francisco. And we definitely, over the past couple of years, have seen the downtown really try to change to what people want it to be. So now one of our streets was recently voted to be completely pedestrianized in our downtown. And I think that that's something that people have been wanting maybe, and they just didn't know it until it happened. And then it did happen because of COVID and the need for outdoor seating and outdoor retail. And they were like, wait, this is amazing. I want to be able to like feel safe and walk around the streets. And they have like this big art mural that goes down the street. So I think this like growth of suburban kind of centers is not necessarily a bad thing because it does reduce the amount of time that people have to go into a further away downtown in a city, especially if they're currently living in a suburb. But like an interesting kind of switch.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, we see this phenomena kind of playing out in a lot of different ways. You have, you know, kind of in Southern California in particular, because I'll focus on that just because you and I are most familiar with that. You have downtown Los Angeles as, you know, essentially we'll just say this is like our hub, mm-hmm. This is our urban core, our city center.
Mm-hmm.
But what, and this is, you know, when we're talking about agglomeration economics, you have this as kind of your center, that core space. But what you end up noticing is although the radius around that extends out quite a bit, the phenomena that we begin seeing is that there's these smaller little pockets kind of coming up around Los Angeles. And we started seeing that a lot in Orange County. So Orange County is a, you know, very large and thriving county, and it has a lot of agglomeration, business agglomeration. What I think is really interesting, and you brought up, you made a really good point, is when we, I think often, because obviously, of course, at the end of the day, to your core, as an urban planner, you are 100% the biggest hater of the suburbs. I feel like that's just kind of like, when you enter an urban planning program, you're just like, no, the suburbs have to go. What I think is really interesting, though, is kind of shifting that perspective, because at the end of the day, do we want more suburban sprawl? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And I'll dead stop. That there's no arguments there. But you and I talk about this a lot. We cannot simply tear down every existing suburb and then say, oh, you know, that's going to solve the problem. The thing is that the suburbs are here. We have suburban communities. So why not try to reimagine those spaces as opportunities for growth, opportunities for different kinds of agglomeration so that, yes, individuals aren't having to make a 58-mile commute into the urban center so that they can get to their job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 58, that was just a little, did you guys remember that from the homework? So I do think it's really interesting that this does bring to light that there is kind of, or there has been in very recent history, this not, I don't want to say competition, but a competition from other activity centers that are popping up. And I don't think, like you said, it's an inherently bad thing. And so this kind of led the article into this examining of how we're rethinking the future of downtowns. And so this is where local jurisdictions and urban planners have understood that even prior to the pandemic, downtowns were going to need to adapt by modernizing their office product, diversifying their land use mix, and prioritizing livability. And I do think that historically, you know, downtowns are known mainly for office and retail space, not necessarily for, you know, livability in the terms of we want to build as much housing. Downtowns are often, you know, they're extremely dense and it's a lot of office and retail space. So, you know, there are a few like high rise apartment towers, and I definitely, you know, acknowledge that, but that's not what downtowns are historically known for. Mm-hmm. So I think there is and has been a huge push for kind of reimagining what those spaces look like. And so there are some strategies that have been implemented at the local level and you know, in planning, where there's an attempt to have a more inclusive workforce development and job recovery program, that there are entrepreneurship and small business development programs, that there's a focus on public safety, there's the acknowledgement and the solution-based addressing of homelessness and the homelessness crisis, and that there's also play and placemaking in the downtown area, as well as collaborative governance and civic engagement. And I think that these strategies are an attempt to say that the COVID pandemic, I think, really did shift the way that people are imagining what work life looks like. And there are a lot of companies that absolutely were like, no, everybody come back into the office 5 days a week, you know, no ifs, ands, or buts. But there are also a lot of companies that found that they work just as effectively online or in a hybrid environment. And so they did choose that like remote work would be okay. And so because of that, you are seeing this shift in the way that, and also I think too, with e-commerce and online retail, a lot of retail has really not been thriving the way that it once was in the downtown centers. Mm-hmm. And this is exceptionally difficult for small businesses, unfortunately. So I think a kind of, you know, small business entrepreneurship development program is very beneficial because I think that can help folks. But all of this to say, it is fundamental in urban planning that you acknowledge the way in which population trends are moving and that you acknowledge the behaviors and the decisions that individuals are choosing to make in how they interact with the urban form. Because at the end of the day, that's exactly who we're building spaces and planning spaces for, is for the population that we're serving. And so I think it really is important to acknowledge what that behavior is, you know, doing. And so we are seeing retail is not really as prominent as it once was. Office space is not as prominent as it once was. How can we reimagine those spaces? Well, a lot of people for a very long time have been talking about the fact that vacant retail spaces could be converted into housing, that vacant office spaces can be converted into housing or into other types of, you know, other types of spaces that serve the public, that serve the community. And so I do think that there's just like this big push for reimagining what downtowns are going to end up looking like. But I think what this also kind of brought to light too, or something that I think about a lot, is the fact that we are always so focused on downtowns and especially like more urban core areas that I feel like we just don't focus as much on existing suburban communities that I think could really benefit from a lot of strategies that have been implemented in downtown areas like walkability, transit amenities, you know, things of that nature. So food for thought, but this was a great article. I highly recommend. Sam and I will obviously be linking it in the show notes, and also we'll put it on the Instagram page so you guys can read it. But I think there were two articles that I was looking at when I was doing the research for this episode, and I just think that they were very interesting and they brought to light a lot of really good points. I think one of them being that a lot of people placed blame solely on the COVID pandemic for why downtowns are turning into these kind of, you know, ghost towns, for a lack of a better word. When in reality, I think this article is bringing to light that this was happening long before that. And because of that, I think we need to kind of shift the focus as, okay, we already knew that there, you know, that this challenge was coming. And so now it's how do we move forward in addressing, you know, the challenges that we're seeing post-COVID?
Totally. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of interesting conversations coming out of this, like the feasibility of office to residential conversions. And if that is like a viable option for developers or people who own office spaces.
Yes, absolutely. And I think just key takeaway at the end of the day is that infrastructure is quite permanent, whether it be transportation infrastructure, housing, etc. And so I think it's less about, you know, unfortunately, although yes, the most ideal thing would be to scrap it and, you know, start all over because we've kind of identified, you know, you almost wish that it was like, oh, this was just our practice run. We know it didn't work out. So like, let's do it all over. You can't do that. So then it does begin, you know, now we need to research, like, how are we going to address these things in a way that still is in line with the existing infrastructure, but brings new opportunity to invite folks back into downtowns, makes it more enticing, makes it more livable, more walkable, more affordable. You know, what does that look like? Because for a lot of folks, I think it really, you know, with gentrification and a lot of other kind of challenges that are being faced in downtown areas and in more, you know, urban centers, you have just kind of a lot of intersectional challenges that I think really are pushing people out into the suburbs. And the more that that happens, you know, a lot of suburbs cannot hold, you know, more housing for people. And we're noticing that in a lot of ways. And that's one of the leading reasons why we have suburban sprawl and all of these bedroom communities popping up. And so I think that that's where, you know, we just begin kind of, you know, I could go on a tangent about this, but I just think that it really is all about envisioning what the future is going to look like that accommodates everyone and makes it more inviting for us to get more people into downtowns versus having more people sprawl out into the suburbs.
And with that, thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. No homework this week. Yeah, no homework, Sam, and I couldn't think of anything. So don't worry. Next week, be prepared because we're going to have something big.
Yeah.
Worth a lot of points.
And wish all of the women in your life a happy Women's History Month.
Yes.
That's the homework.
Oh, great. Great assignments.
Thank you so much for listening. We really hope that you enjoyed this episode of Urban Planning Is Not Boring. If you did, please remember to send us to your friends and follow us wherever you get your podcasts.
Remember, guys, urban planning is not boring.
No, it is not.